When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 33. Going to continue our hot stove recap because it just doesn't stop. The list is longer than it was last time. It's so much fun, but we're going to kind of try to dig in deeper on each topic to get you the full fantasy impact instead of just blowing through them. So if it takes a while, so be it. But it's fun. This will be our last episode of the 2022 calendar year. So Merry Christmas, happy holidays for whatever you're doing there. But before I keep doing all that, let me be a nice guest here, our host, and introduce my co-host. I'm on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're doing great. We are more caffeinated than usual. This is the matinee episode. Usually we record like 8:30 our time after the kids are down after a long day. I mean, I know for me, like once we start going, adrenaline just kicks in and that sort of thing. But the energy level today is much higher than normal. Recording this around lunchtime and yeah, have family in town for the holiday. We're heading down to Arizona on Christmas, actually. So getting ready for that. But excited. Yeah. Last episode of the year. It's been a hell of a year, man.
It has.
Glad we're doing this and many more good ones to come.
33 episodes. That's not too shabby, my friend. Not too shabby from a let's talk about it after FPAS 2 years ago and see where it goes. That's pretty good.
I think we started our first episode was late March, something like that. So
yeah, because it was one
of the first 3 months of the year.
But yeah, we jumped in and then it's been a fun ride ever since. More and more fun as we go. And honestly, like Ryan and I will pass messages and we talk often is the listeners have been awesome. That's one thing I'll say. They jumped on this train real quick and trusted our two brains for some reason to, or at least trusted my brain for some reason. Ryan's the Bloom Board guy. So he's got that going for him to make this work. So that's been pretty cool to see that grow. Looking forward to seeing where it goes in 2023. I'll tell you that much. So
absolutely.
All right, let's get into it because I could talk sappy stuff all day, but we'll start with this one because he's not a giant anymore. We won't get into the Correa stuff. If you want that, listen to the last episode or just call me sometime. I'm still
I was going to – I know you've been, Bubba, you've been the four – this is your fourth this week, so I was going to poke the bear again with Correa.
You can.
I'll pass.
I'm pissed. Like I told you off air, every time I go on Twitter, there's something new that makes it look worse than the first time. It's just – it's embarrassing.
We'll go there just a sec. So like our last episode, Correa signed while we were recording. And if anyone wants to check out Bubba's live reaction, I did kind of pull that off the video and posted that one. So that was pretty hilarious. Your reaction was not very positive at the time. Again, just seeing it like that second for the first time. Mm-hmm. Now that you know you had Correa and now that you don't have Correa and you being the Giants are sitting on a boatload of money that's unspent, would you rather still have Correa, or is it more like the kind of the embarrassment, the saving face, the process at which San Francisco did or didn't shake this out?
Oh, it's the embarrassment for me because I never wanted to create. That's obvious by last week.
Right.
What I'm pissed off about is we spent a week doing this where we could have signed Swanson. We could have signed Drury. We could have signed a bunch of other guys. Swanson plus Rodon would have equaled Correa's contract. Like, these are things they could have done, but no, we already had the money tied up. We're done. Now all those guys are gone. You look at what he got left. Gene Segura, good ball player, not Carlos Correa. You just go down the list and it's like, you literally did this song and dance, and then you're like, wait a minute, this is a high school, this is a junior high dance, girls over there, guys over here, Correa over here, Giants over here, cold feet, I'm not coming into the water anymore. So this isn't working, and it's just, they blew it completely. They have more money than God to spend, and the worst part is, it was a Boris client, which is never good, and there's a Boris client that's going to be a free agent next year that everybody wants. Pretty sure that's not going to work out too well now. So Shohei Ohtani might as well not even be a dream of the Giants. Because that's not coming along. It's just like, and that'd be who they'd have to get to make me happy right now. Because they wasted all of this money. All of this money. Like, sign Shohei right now. And there's already rumors that they're talking about, well, trade everybody but Doval and Webb and start rebuilding with prospects. And I'm like, oh, God. They were so, like, this is just, the world is burning. And it's December. So much fun. That's why I tweeted. I said, it's good to know I've already lost the 2023 season. I'll see. Like, this is what fantasy baseball is for, people.
Yeah, no, that's a great point on that, like, lost week where they pretty much were dancing with Correa, and now that that fell through, there's nothing left. Like, that's kind of the killer, because I think they that's would go biggest. After Dansby. I think they would have spent that money elsewhere if they resolved the Correa situation quickly.
Yep, that's my biggest anger about it. They wasted all that time and money, and they still kept the money. All right.
Enough of that. We got. Bubba's gonna go downhill real quick here. So we got.
I can. The Correa thing really gets me angry. So, Rodon, Carlos Rodon, who I loved as a Giant. I know we've talked about it many times on this show. I think you're with me. We're hesitant in draft season last year because, like, why would the White Sox not give him the qualifying offer? Like, it made no sense. Well, he was fine outside of, like, a little hiccup. He was fine. Oh, he was awesome in 2022. Gets a big deal, 5 years with the Yanks. He had his press conference on Thursday, right before we recorded, clean shaven. That was the big headline all over Twitter. But, you switch divisions, you switch to a big division. That's interesting. But Rodon's been so good. He's been dominant. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on him.
It's just funny how, with pitchers, there's only so much you can kind of look at. Like, I think the conversation's a little bit more interesting with hitters because there is, team lineup and batting order and park and all that stuff. With pitchers, it's more, what's the run support? What's the park look like? And it's funny, like, I don't know, with Rodon, it used to be a death knell to go from the NL West to the AL East. Like, that used to be terrible. For a pitcher, I don't really see it that way anymore for a couple reasons. First and foremost is the DH. That's the big thing. I mean, run scoring was actually higher in the National League last season than it was in the American League with the DH. So, like, that's something that's just, that's years of ingrained. You don't want to go to the AL as a pitcher. That's not the case anymore. Balanced schedule, AL East used to be kind of the division you don't want a pitcher to go into because you face so many of those teams every year. Schedule's a little bit more balanced. And really from a park factor standpoint, the more we kind of know about Oracle, about Yankee Stadium, with Baseball Savant's park factors, they're almost the same. If you look at what the key metric that I look at, and you can Google Savant park factors, it's right there, is the wOBA on contact for each of these stadiums. And Oracle and Yankee Stadium are almost neck and neck. So it's almost from an actual park factor standpoint, it's pretty neutral as well. And so the last thing I would say with Rodon is the run support. He's going to get more run support with the Yankees. So I think all in all, like, this is a really great move for Rodon for his fantasy value. You'd have to think the Yankees did their due diligence. Giants-esque on that physical, just to twist that knife.
By the way, Correa had his physical today, passed it in flying colors.
With the Mets. Every single player we talk about, we're going to try and weave in a little bit of a twist.
I should go change my energy drink out for high noons if we're going to do this all episode.
but presumably Rodon passed that physical, and it's just another kind of good sign. So great move for him, I think.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. Like, I'm always going to have it in the back of my head how injured he was for, like, so many years in a row. That's just scary. Any pitcher, you talk shoulders, you talk elbows. I'm nervous about that no matter what. But he's been really good for 2 years, like, really good. And it's kind of like my Gossman problems I've always had. Like, I just need to say, hey, the dude's good. Like, let's get over it. Rodon's good when healthy. And right now he's healthy. That's all you can go off of. He's got an ADP in the month of December on DCs of like 53.8, going slightly in front of Julio Urias, Max Scherzer, Zach Wheeler. He's going in front of all three of them. They're all like two picks apart. But that's an interesting discussion. Like, do you – the strikeout guy that's got the back issues in Scherzer, the young guy we've talked about many times about, like, we're starting to buy him on Urias because of the wins, but the, you know, innings might not be there. And then Wheeler's just a hog, like a horse. So it's an interesting, like, little package there of four pitchers that will break down as it goes on. But Rodon's got the love. He's up there in the, like, elite tier of pitchers, at least in the, like, back end of, you know, what is that, round four?
Yep,
So that's a really good spot for him and a good pairing. So it'll be interesting to see if that changes anymore with the Yankees news. But I think it kind of backs up even more what you're saying. There's really, it's like a lateral move, if not a better move, going from the Giants to the Yankees. And the ADP kind of reflects that as well.
Yep, agreed.
Dansby Swanson. Could have been a Giant. Could have been. Yep, should have been. I was actually saying that last week when they signed Correa. Like, you could have signed Dansby Swanson.
Absolutely should have been.
Yeah, should have been. Except there is a good story. I don't know if you heard it. His grandfather, lifelong Chicago Cubs fan, passed away like a week ago. 2 days later, he signed with the Cubs. So there's a good story there. Plus, his wife plays for the Chicago soccer team. So there's a couple trends there, but could have been a Giant. They have airfare. It would have worked. But Dansby Swanson signs with the Chicago Cubs. Great for Dansby. I love Dansby. I think a lot of us like Dansby, power, speed. It'll be interesting to see what takes place because I just looked at the Chicago Cubs lineup, a little different. Like, if Roster Resource has it right, Nico Horner leading off, Swanson second, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, Cody Bellinger. Doesn't really scream Atlanta Braves offense surrounding Dansby Swanson, but, you know, going to play every day, going to be a beast. It's a good move for him. But to me, it might take a little hit in his fantasy value. I'm not sure how you look at it.
I think it's mostly neutral. So you kind of have to weigh the kind of the worst lineup with Chicago compared to Atlanta. But the fact that Dansby Swanson, the research in the Baseball Forecaster this year that Ed DeCaria put out on playing time is absolutely fascinating stuff. And Dansby Swanson pops on a metric we're calling plate appearances per active week. And Ed does some really good research on how that is kind of like a skill for a player to be able to be in the lineup every single day, like you said, Bubba, and play that often. And that's only going to get better with Swanson at or near the top of that order. So, like, Swanson is a compiler. I don't think that's necessarily a negative. I could see Dansby Swanson absolutely going over 700 plate appearances just because the guy plays every single day and his spot in the lineup will accentuate that. So from that aspect, I think Dansby Swanson kind of stays where he is in terms of ADP. I think he's like the seventh shortstop off the board, going right after like Corey Seager. HQ's projections have Swanson a little bit higher, and that's after the move for Seager. I just like the kind of the all-around package. I think that five category, kind of modest five category. Yes, he doesn't have the great power, doesn't have the great speed, but over 700 plate appearances that he can rack up over a season, you factor in the runs, I think it's a fine move. The Cubs are going to let him play and rack up those plate appearances, where if he stayed in Atlanta, he was with a healthy Ozzie Albies. Yep. Swanson's more of a kind of sixth or seventh hitter.
And that's the biggest thing, like you said. It's going to, when we talk, like you said, Ed had the great article. You know, Zimmerman has said it for a long time. Different spots in the order, obviously, as like the season goes on, they've done the math. Like, it's a massively difference on plate appearances, which you can rack up the counting stats. And Dansby is like, Dansby, Albies, and now you throw in even Michael Harris. There's like a revolving door at the top of the order behind Ronald Acuna. Like, Ozzie and Dansby like thrived at the front when Acuna was out. Now there's the mouse to feed. It kind of depends on where it's going to go. In Chicago, he's locked into the top. So that's just a good spot as well. And Nico Horner was getting better as the year went on, so he might get on base for him too. You never know, and see where that one takes him.
So. And Nico ran a little bit. So the other kind of thing we don't know is, will Chicago give Swanson a green-ish light? And true. I mean, they did with Nico Horner. So
Happ ran too.
Yep, and Happ ran as
so
well.
They like, let certain guys run that could, it seems like. So, yeah, he might be right. Yep. Heck, didn't Wilson Contreras almost get 10, like 8 stolen bases or something? Like, they might actually be a running team now that I think about it. Like, they might be more than we're giving them credit for. And what do they have to lose? Like, let the boys run. So, I think the biggest thing, and we can stop after this, is if Seiya Suzuki can be the guy we thought he'd be, that's where it really thrives. Huge.
You're right. I was going to kind of say Bellinger too, but I kind of think that ship has sailed. Like, say, yeah. Suzuki could be a real stud. And I took him in our Gladiator 2 weeks ago when we did that during the show. I believe in Suzuki, but you're right. If Suzuki can kind of drive home and keep flipping that lineup over,
that'd be big.
Yep.
JD Martinez signs with the Los Angeles Dodgers. A great move. It's cheap. Hey, could have been a Giant. Really, really cheap move. I think it's a great spot for him. A guy, you know, had his issues last year, like we all know. I think the talent's still there. He's only like 35. He's not that old. Going to sit right in the middle of that lineup with, you know, Muncy bouncing back and those other guys. I think it's a great spot just to kind of not be the main focal point or one of the main focal points, just be a dude in that lineup. And that's going to help him tremendously get back his confidence and just become a world-class hitter again. So I love this move for the Dodgers, and that really hurt coming out of my mouth. But, it's a solid move, I think, for fantasy and real life, honestly.
I mean, you could argue, I don't know, world-class, but you could argue he was kind of this, JD Martinez was the same hitter that he was in 2021 when Martinez hit 286 with 28 homers, 99 RBI. The barrel rate was exactly the same in 2022 to 2021, 12.4%, and had 12 fewer home runs last season because of that. The K rate was up like a half percent, 23.7, 24.3. That's rounding error. So this was basically the same guy in 2021 that was on his quote unquote down year last year. And the fact that the Dodgers of all teams realized that and pounced on it and seemingly will give JD Martinez, I don't know about like full time at DH. LA likes to kind of rotate in like a Will Smith or Max Muncy into that spot a little bit, but I think JD Martinez plays five or six times a week in DH on a great lineup. It's a fantastic landing spot for someone who I thought was going to rebound anyway for those reasons that I just stated. And the LA case bolsters that even more, probably ups his ADP as well, unfortunately. But another guy who I took in the Gladiator 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so that was you're just coming up roses right now, Ryan. Yeah. But yeah, we look at JD.
You got to win these titles in December. That's all that counts.
That's when they matter. His fly ball rate rose four, or his ground ball rate rose 4% last year. Fly ball dropped 2. Literally, that could be 4 or 5 more home runs the way JD hits the ball hard. So it's really just like you said, it's kind of just missed the big thing. And the other kind of, I don't know if it's really valid, but something I do like with this move, if people forget when Justin Turner became a good hitter, it was with LA. JD and Justin used the same hitting coach to do that. Maybe now JD's closer to his hitting coach to work on these things a little more. I could be way overthinking this, but that was like the first thing that came to my mind when I heard them. Like, huh, this could be like a comfort zone type thing. And yeah,
that's interesting.
Really, really get him back on track. And something to think about. And his ADP right now is 256. So,
yeah. I mean, a lot of that is he's utility only, I believe. True. But still,
it's pretty valuable.
Yeah, he's gonna be good against your Giants this year.
without Carlos Correa, Boston Red Sox, they went and signed Justin Turner, another like team friendly deal. I guess it gives you Rafael Devers backup/ I have a DH now to take JD Martinez's spot. Turner's just been a pure like professional hitter for years now. When he's on the field, he always seems to miss a little bit of time, but he's usually not DHing all the time, which he literally should just be the DH for the most part in Boston. And this is a great move to slide in that lineup. Kind of takes Bogart's spot. I'm not saying he is going to replace Bogart's, but takes his spot in the order. And it still keeps at least the top part strong with Yoshida, Story, Devers, Turner, and see where it goes from there. So it's a pretty nice move for a team that's trying to still kind of compete without breaking the bank because they let most of their free agents go.
Yeah, I don't think this is the move that Boston fans are going to forgive Chaim Bloom for all of the kind of the Xander Bogaerts debacle. The thing that I like with Turner, and one thing that I always like to look at, it doesn't draw the headlines with these, but you know, is he booting anyone from the role? Is anyone losing playing time because of this? Didn't really look like it. Like Devers is going to be at third, and Turner's pretty much going to be the full-time DH. It's funny, like Justin Turner, who we just all assumed was injury prone and really kind of was throughout his career. The last two seasons combined, guess how many days on the IL he has?
Maybe 12.
He's got 8. 8.
You want to know what's taken place the last two seasons that might have changed things for him?
What's that?
Designated hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to throw it out there. It's how it works for these guys. Look at Eli Himmel. Like, Justin Turner's the perfect example of that right there.
Yep, exactly. And Boston's not going to make him play the field very often. So it's a downgrade in terms of the lineup, but I don't know. He's plenty over the monster. The park could be fine. And Boston, like you said, is good enough from a lineup standpoint to keep him going. So Justin Turner, like, I do wonder if this is kind of his last, if, especially if he's DH only heading into 2024, if this is kind of the swan song for Turner in terms of his fantasy value. But for 2023 redraft, we don't really care about that. So go ahead with him.
And I don't wish doom and gloom on anybody, but if, say, Tristan Casas isn't the guy, Turner can easily play first base. Easily. And that's something that works in their angle. Then there we go, not having to be util only again in the future. But like we mentioned with JD, I noticed some of these names in a draft I'm doing, because I'm kind of around this area in my 50s right now. Justin Turner's got like an ADP of 321. And that'll go up a little bit. But that, like, for the third base position, what we've talked about before, one of the perks to early drafting right now is what I'll say. That's what I'll say. Like, you can get a value right there.
The third baseman going around Justin Turner, Isak Paredes, Wilmer Flores, your boy, Eduardo Escobar. All of a sudden has
playing time now.
Right. Yeah. Gio Urshela. Like, I would take Justin Turner over
100%.
All those guys.
So. Yeah. So it definitely opens the door to some options in that one. The Tampa Bay Rays, biggest contract, I believe, in Rays history, Ryan. Biggest one. It wasn't that big. Zach Gefflin signs a 3-year deal with the Rays. Good for Zach. Kind of surprised some, but the dude's been good. I was just like, wow, they gave him all of this. Like, really? But he should slide in there. We know how the Rays handle their pitching staffs. This could be a really good spot for Zach, actually.
Yeah, it could be. Like, with Eflin, it's really tough. He was really good last year, but don't fall into that trap of just looking at his season-long numbers and assuming that's going to translate. Like, he was a totally different pitcher when he came out of the when he came back and was a reliever. So his last seven games when Eflin came back, a 1.17 ERA, the velocity was way up, the ground ball rate was way up. Does Tampa kind of take that approach that Eflin had as a reliever and try to make that work as a starter? He's one of those guys where the starter reliever splits are pretty wide. So just be a little bit careful of that when you're projecting Eflin out for next year. The other side to that argument is, like you said, Bubba, that largest contract in Tampa history. They obviously see something, and Tampa Bay is obviously a lot smarter than you and I, no offense to you. Probably you and I combined times. I
100% 10. Agree. No insults there.
So there is a little bit of appeal to authority here in terms of, I believe they're going to make him a starter. They need the innings out of the rotation. And you kind of just trust that Tampa knows what they're doing here.
Yep. And I think you can still trust them. So that's good. I like the move. I like the move. I wouldn't go on in drafts. He was more of a guy I streamed at times last year, but I could see the appeal. They, if anything, with Tampa, they know how to use the proper pitch mixes. Yeah. And we've noticed with Eflin between the bullpen and the others how effective he can be when you do that. So definitely
something. Yeah. Yep. I just keep your ear out if they make it like a Yarbrough thing, or maybe he's like a follower, which would be ultimate, you know, that would be true. Ideal. But maybe they're thinking Eflin uses that approach that he had as a reliever and goes maybe four innings. But if that's second through fifth inning, that's pretty sweet. Big. So a lot depends on how Tampa wants to use them.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Taiwan Walker, pretty solid year with the Mets last year. Back-to-back years over 157 innings. which is big for Taiwan in my mind. ERA dropped last year from the year before. Signs with the Phillies. That's the part that concerns me. Not the best pitcher's ballpark, as we know, but we've seen Wheeler do his thing. We've seen Nola. Walker's not one of those two guys. I'll stop that comment real quick, but we've seen it's doable with the right setup. The defense behind him, not great, as we know as well. But interesting landing spot. I'm kind of torn on him. I was kind of in on him with the Mets, kind of out on him with the Phillies. I'm a little nervous on this one. What about you?
Yeah, the park kind of hurts with Taiwan. I know Philly, I mean, he's probably going to get that run support. That's going to be pretty sweet. The kind of ironic thing is Walker's going right in front of Ranger Suarez around 300 ADP. And I think I'd take Walker just for that kind of certainty of innings for next year. I think he pitched a little bit over his head last season. I wouldn't expect another 350 ERA. I think more like 385, something like that, which is fine. Over, like you said, Bubba, almost 160 innings the last two seasons, in each of the last two seasons. Would love to see the K rate a little bit higher, like a 7.6 strikeouts per nine. A 20% K rate for Walker's is not very good, but he might at least make some of that up with volume and with wins in Philly. So
that's kind of a trend we're seeing here. That's one thing I do with my drafting. I'm trying to focus on strikeout guys. I know we all try to, and eventually you just can't. But like we just talked to Eflin, we just talked Walker. They have very similar strikeout situations. And then we're going to talk Jameson Taillon going to the Chicago Cubs, and he's another guy, you know, 7.66 K per nine, 8.6. He's always been that 7 to 8 guy, similar to Taillon, similar to Eflin. And it kind of is a tough one here, but he goes to Chicago out of the three pitchers we're talking about here. And I'll let you take the floor on Taillon in a second. I like this move the most, honestly, as weird as that sounds. I've always been kind of a Taillon fan. You know, he battled injuries. Like last year was his first fully healthy year, close to fully healthy year in a little while. Now he goes to the Cubs, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out, kind of just getting out of Yankee Stadium, taking the pressure off of him, getting to the Central. I'm intrigued with Jameson Taillon this next season. So what do you got on him?
Yeah, and he's someone like with the Tommy John concerns. I mean, that's far in the past with 177 innings last year with New York. Like that's awesome. The thing I think that goes not undetected, but underappreciated with Taillon and this type of pitcher is the walk rate. Like you're going to get a really good whip out of Jameson Taillon, and that matters a lot. And we just talked about the Cubs lineup, like with Swanson now, you know, decent, at least not the total suck that it was last season. So I mean, at HQ, we've got him projected for like a 4 ERA, which doesn't sound that great if you're just looking at ERA, but a 1.14 whip like that will definitely play where Taillon is going in drafts right now, which is right around 250. So you take that volume with decent ratios and probably not 14 wins again like he had with New York, maybe 10-11. That's still fine if you need innings to build out kind of that middle late part of your rotation, even though, you know, the ERA won't be sexy, the strikeout rate won't be sexy, the whips and the innings I think will be.
Yep, I'm with you. The whip is the biggest one. That's always an issue, like we talked about in our early like recap of what we did wrong situations. Whip was a stat I know I didn't pay enough attention. I think you even mentioned it as well. And guys like Taillon can do it. It's funny, I just mentioned the three guys strikeout deals, but like we all kind of like Taillon, Walker, and Eflin kind of in that order for now until we know Eflin's and ADP 251, 298, 308. So ADP kind of agrees with what we're looking at, and they make sense if you think about it. And maybe that 298 makes Walker a little more viable, I'll be honest, like closer to 300. But I like that Taillon at 251. That could be like your SP 5-ish or 6, yeah, maybe.
Five
even.
Or 6.
Yep. That's not bad. Really not a bad guy to fall back on, because we've seen him be not necessarily an ace, but close to an ace in a rotation. And he could take that jump. You mentioned full year off of Tommy John, 177 innings. They're going to let him go in Chicago. Why not? Like, that's a very intriguing option there at that ADP. Yeah. All right. Andrew Benintendi. I like this move for him. Like,
yeah,
Benny's never going to be the guy I think we all thought he would be. And that's fine. Like, once you learn to accept that, that's great. Dude's going to be 29 this year. He's still not that old. And he's going to play with the White Sox. And that, you know what this also does? Just guarantees Eloy's going to DH, no? He's going to throw that one out there until injuries take place. But, you know, this is a guy, power, some speed. Get him later in drafts, and more importantly, it's for average later in drafts. Like, you get a little bit of everything, and if they put him at the right spot of the order, that's big up for questions. All it takes is a Lou Bob injury. Seen that many times. But this is a really good landing spot for Benintendi. I like this a lot.
I mean, I could even see Benintendi hitting first, hitting second. I mean, Tim Anderson's probably the leadoff guy for whenever Tim Anderson is actually in the lineup and healthy. The batting average that you mentioned is huge. And I'm going to do a quick plug, a quick shout out to the FTN gang, to Vlad Sedler, who just released their fantasy baseball draft guide. Friend of the show, Steve Weimer, put an essay in there about scarcity. And when we talk about scarcity in fantasy, a lot of times we're talking about position scarcity. Steve writes about category scarcity. And I'm not going to kind of give away everything, but one of the main takeaways that I had from that article is how scarce high batting average hitters are even in the middle of drafts. And Benintendi is kind of a unicorn in that aspect. And the fact that Benintendi is going to the White Sox, if he hits before Lubaugh, before Eloy in that lineup, he's going to get those runs scored when he does get on base. He's an on-base machine. He's going to compile. We were just talking about, you know, compiling with Dansby Swanson. Benintendi doesn't have the raw power, the raw speed to put up like super high homers and steals. But again, you pair that with the 650 plate appearance season with that, which only makes the elite batting average that Benintendi brings to the table, makes that even more valuable when you stretch that out over that many plate appearances. So this is, to me, like the ultimate landing spot for Benintendi. That left-handed bat fits so well in the White Sox lineup if he goes in between like Anderson's, Lubaugh, and Eloy. And you're right, in that division.
Those ballparks favor lefties very well. Like it's he was a Royal, like we know these things, but I like it a lot. I like the comment. I don't want to go down the rabbit hole on the scarcity thing. Yes, and check out the FTN. Those guys do great work over there. And then Vlad's our guy, and he's got, you know, Weimer. I didn't read the article yet, but now I know why I had questions in a chat about scarcity, because someone was saying that, you know, certain people don't believe in scarcity, and they started going off on positions. I said, I don't think they're talking about positions, guys. And I didn't even read the article yet. I said, it's more about this, like building your point totals. They look at SGP, they look at these things. And so then what is scarce? And that's where you go to the stats department. That's a different story. And so like these guys look at, you can basically put numbers instead of players, and they don't care what the player's name is. They want the stats to get there in the end. That's where scarcity matters. And I think it's a great point, because we get caught up so many times. Well, it's a shallow position. This one dries up. And it's true. It does. I guess you just have to be better at stomaching not sexy players. But if your end total is where we want it, that's all that matters. And that's the hard part to wrap around your head, because it's fantasy and you want it to be fun. You want your team to look awesome. Like, that's what you want. And so, again, I won't go down that rabbit hole. We got a lot to talk about. But it's a very interesting conversation that I think that's why some of the best players can think that way.
Absolutely. It's a giant puzzle. Got to put it all together. It's hard, but that's what makes it fun.
No doubt about it. What makes this fun, I love this move. I really do. Brandon Drury.
His ADP, should he have signed with the Giants?
Yeah, I'll do. Probably. 2 years, $17 million. Are you freaking kidding me? Even if they had Correa, they could have signed him. Like, this should have been a no-brainer to me. This one pissed me off more than I think Correa not coming to the Giants on Wednesday. This was the easiest move in the books. Like, cut Wilmer Flores and put Brandon Drury in his spot. This is the dumbest thing I've seen. 2 years, $17 million. Unbelievable. But I digress. I drafted him the morning he signed before he signed, so I was happy about that. I'm 2 for 2 on that so far this year. But I love the landing spot, because who's he going to take spot? Fletcher, of course. Ringifo, he should. Rendon probably finds the IL again at some time. Like, this is just, Drury can play everywhere all over the infield. Probably plays the outfield if you really needed him to. The Angels lineup is getting better and better as long as Trout and company stay healthy. Because now you got Ward, Trout, Otani, Rendon, Renfro, Drury. What if Walsh, O'Hop, like, get it going? Like, all of a sudden, this team we've made fun of for years, never building around Trout, is kind of not like breaking the bank, but they're building around him. So this is a very interesting situation. I love the move for Drury. I love it for his fantasy value. What do you got?
I'd like it. I think Brandon Drury, so all the points you make are valid. Like, and if he plays and he's around Otani and Trout, and he will play kind of everywhere in LA, and LA will play him. I say LA, Anaheim. We'll play him at a variety of spots. So the versatility, the lineup is decent. I will say, like, I don't think Brandon Drury's touching 28 home runs again next season. I think that a lot of that was Great American Small Park combined with just, you know, the raw power was not, didn't fully support the breakout. And Brandon Drury had never hit over 16 home runs in a major league season, and he's 30 years old. Like, I think regression kind of hits Brandon Drury kind of hard. But this skill set has value. Anyone with multi-position who's going to play every day is fine. So from that aspect, like, landing in Anaheim is good for his value. I just don't take last year's stats and extrapolate that. I think that's I think regression, like I said, is gonna hit him pretty hard this year.
I'm shooting.
And I was a big Drury guy last year.
I'm shooting for 20-ish home runs. Just give me 20-ish home runs, and
that's the HQ projection is 20 on the dot.
Yeah, so. I'm a realist in that regard for sure. But yeah, get him in that lineup, see what happens. The Dodgers made another great move. Didn't know if you guys saw it. They didn't re-sign Cody Bellinger because they're a great organization. And Cody Bellinger went to the Chicago Cubs. I've bombed on Bellinger enough. I wish the guy well. He's already trying to change his swing for the 12th time, it feels like. Again, we've already seen videos this offseason. Either there's something physically wrong with the guy or there's something between his ears that are wrong. Either way, it's going to make it very tough to consistently hit a baseball. Maybe that changes eventually. I just won't have any shares of Cody until he does. Like, it's a good spot in Chicago. A lot of pressure's off of him. Go do your thing. Like, that could be what he needs, actually. Who knows? I don't see it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I don't see it either. And I think the Dodgers kind of cutting the cord on that. just kind of cements that there may be something to the kind of the pressure off kind of a deal, but I don't know. I mean, the Cubs, that there's a lot of eyes. There will be a lot of eyes on Cody Bellinger next season. I mean, from a playing time standpoint, it's great. He's the everyday center fielder. I don't think Bellinger will go to first. I think that's Matt Mervis's job to lose heading into next season. The one maybe ripple effect is Brennan Davis, one of the Cubs' top prospects. Maybe that ETA is not as early as we thought with Bellinger out in center field. But no, this doesn't really change anything with me for Bellinger. I've been off, and I'm probably going to be off again next year.
Yep, 100% on board on that one. A smaller move, but does have impact in your deep two catcher leagues. Christian Vasquez,
your wheelhouse.
Yes, this is me. Hey, I actually got a compliment from Fish on Monday night talking about the catcher's depth. I was like, my man, like, there you get it. You do the deep leagues, you get it. Yes, I figured you'd get a chuckle when you heard that.
We all have to have our niche, right?
Yep, we all have to get stuck in some hole, and I got it. Christian Vasquez. He went to the Minnesota Twins, which kind of surprised me because Ryan Jeffers seemed to be good enough, kind of a Twins type guy, which kind of, so I was expecting to get Cleveland or even the Mets or somebody else, even to stay in Houston, like over Maldonado. It seemed like good landing spots, or the Giants were rumored because Bart is apparently that bad, but they were spending money on Correa, so they couldn't give it to Vasquez. That's what took place. I told you, we'll go full circle every single one of these if you want. Vasquez goes to Minnesota. I don't know what to think. Like, I kind of like Vasquez because he played a lot, and little power, little speed, decent average for catcher, which is actually kind of big. But I think him and Jeffers split this pretty good now. It's not more of a – it might be like a two-thirds to a third deal, but I don't think it's a dominating, like, advantage to Vasquez. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we saw with Houston, what Houston did with Vasquez. I mean, Vasquez was pretty much not the primary catcher down the stretch with Houston last year because of the defense. I mean, Martin Maldonado is an elite defender. So that may have had something to do with it. I personally wish Vasquez went somewhere else because I really like Ryan Jeffers. Yeah. He would have been a target and probably still is for the reasons you just mentioned, Bubba. Is like, I think this is more of a split than probably most people believe, which kind of hurts the fantasy value for both of them. So, like, yeah, selfishly, I wish Vasquez went somewhere else. I mean, not to go down the scarcity path again, but that batting average, I mean, Christian Vasquez as a catcher where he's going has hit over 270 in three of the last four seasons. And the season that he did not hit 270, he hit 258. Like, that has a ton of value as a catcher to get that kind of batting average. And he even ran a little bit, at least with Boston. That dried up last year with just one stolen base. So I don't really like it. I'd like to see kind of 70-30 splits at catcher. I think this is going to be more 50-50 with Vasquez and Jeffers, assuming they're both healthy.
Yeah, it's kind of puts a damper on that a bit. Let's go to another one here that took place in the last couple of days. Ryan, what if I told you you could draft a guy that will hit at the top of the defending World Series lineup that will hit for a pretty darn good average, power isn't quite what it used to be. It's still not horrible. I think it'll bounce back a little better than last year. And you can get him at an ADP of 443. And people can't say it's because they didn't know where he was going to sign. If you didn't think he was going back to Houston and taking advantage of that, like, I don't know. Like, that seemed like the perfect storm. Michael Brantley goes back to Houston. He's projected to hit the top of the order. I don't know why he wouldn't, because he gets on base like crazy, scores a ton of runs. And, yeah, this is ridiculous. Plus, not just for DC values, but a great move by the defending champions and for Michael Brantley.
Michael Brantley, the last, let's see, four fantasy seasons, or last five, $27, $23, $16, $15 of earnings. And last year was just five and just 200 at-bats. So assuming Michael Brantley, like Father Time, hasn't knocked him out, I don't think it is, just because Houston brought him back. Look what they did with Justin Verlander, brought him back last year. Like, Houston knows what they're doing. I think Michael Brantley hits second in that lineup right after Altuve, right before your Jose Abreu, Yordan Alvarez. Like, that is just beautiful. And maybe this is going to be called the batting average episode. I don't know, but maybe all these guys just have great batting averages. The combination of batting average, runs, and just even just a little bit of pop in that lineup with those plate appearances is going to be sweet. And Michael Brantley is perennially underdrafted. You just mentioned his ADP, Bubba. So hard not to like this move for Brantley. Again, doesn't really kick anyone out of a role fantasy wise in Houston. Maybe Jake Myers, but we could argue the skill of Jake Myers in the first place. So it's a great move. I love it. Yeah.
The perfect move, baseball, fantasy, you name it. It does very well, especially your five catcher leagues, deeper leagues. Like, Brantley brings a ton of quiet value to your lineup. Like, really does. Yep. Mitch Haniger, the biggest signing for the Giants this offseason.
Hey, here Mitch we Haniger, go.
This is here a we talked Zach Eflin, biggest deal for the Rays in history. What's the biggest deal for the Giants this offseason? Bring it on, boys. Mitch Haniger signs for the Giants. Apparently, he's going to be the power hitter in the middle of the order because they couldn't find one on the books to sign this offseason. And, this fucking sucks. I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. He's gonna be good. He's gonna be really good. I'm wondering, do we get the 2021 guy that hit 39 homers, or do we get the guy that hits like 15 to 20? That's the million-dollar question. He's not gonna run, so no. I think it'll be nice, but I don't know. This seems kind of like a pipe dream.
I mean, be a little bit more, be a little bit happier there. I think Haniger's, like, as the highlight acquisition of your offseason, no. But Mitch Haniger is moving out of a pretty terrible ballpark in Seattle, and honestly not the best lineup. Like, we can joke about the Giants lineup all we want without Correa. Like, it's not great, but it's honestly not that much better, not that much worse than what Seattle was throwing out there last season. I always think, and maybe this is just me, the Giants platoon all the time, I think Haniger's free of that. Haniger's pretty good against lefties and righties, and I think he's going to be one of those guys who just plays every day. In terms of your, like, Bubba, you brought up, are we going to see that 2021 version of Haniger? No, the 250, 39 homers, 100 plus runs in RBI, I don't think that's coming back. But HQs, we're projecting 27 bombs, 250-ish batting average. Like, I think that's fine. It's kind of that dime a dozen, though, where Haniger's going in drafts, kind of a commodity. There's a lot of Mitch Haniger types out there. So overall, it's just kind of a marginal move. Yes, the addition of Correa and or Judge would have been massive for Haniger in terms of just turning that lineup over and getting runs in RBI. But as we know, that did not.
No, but what did happen is the Giants also got two pitchers, and this was a lot funnier joke last week before this took place, but they signed Sean Manaea, and everyone knows my thoughts on Sean Manaea, but weirdly enough, I've drafted him already this year because he's going super cheap, and I like the situation. I think he's better than I give him credit for, so when he blows up, he blows up. It's like Andrew Heaney-esque when he blows up. And there's been an article that came out that said he wasn't taking things as seriously in San Diego, and it was a big wake-up call for him, for his career. So take that as you wish. And then the Ross Stripling deal. I loved Ross Stripling last year. He'd get you five, maybe six innings. Strikeouts were sometimes good, usually not. But he was a great ratio guy, and he'd get you wins in Toronto. Probably won't get you those wins with the Giants right now, but I don't mind him as a late riding dart. So I like both these moves. I think Stripling literally is like the perfect Giants pitcher. Might not be the best fantasy pitcher. He's the perfect Giants pitcher. And so I like the moves for the Giants fantasy wise, like to be determined is what I'd say.
Yeah. The Manaea thing, I mean, if you believe in kind of taking the long, playing the long game with even with pitchers and trusting a track record on somebody, Sean Manaea is your maybe not ultimate rebound candidate, but he's a pretty damn good rebound candidate. Manaea's skills from like 2019 through 21 were pretty fantastic. And again, like I still, no matter what's kind of going on behind the scenes with San Francisco, I still do trust their ability to identify and develop talent in the starting rotation. So Sean Manaea, and he's going to go deep into games as long as he can. I think it's a great fit. I don't love the run support, but that is what it is. Ross Stripling, like I get some like Jacob Junis vibes where he goes like four or five innings. I mean, that's all, and it's hard to get wins that way. Like in Toronto last year, like the lineup was great, but they still Stripling only went like five innings most of the time, or sometimes even fewer. So like I don't know how built up Stripling is to get wins, and the strikeouts are already low. I had some, you know, he's not touching a 3 ERA like he had last year. HQ projection 3.75. I'd go up near like 4, and I don't know. I just kind of see some blah from Ross Stripling. I'd probably actually take Manaea over Stripling right now. I don't know what their ADPs are, or if you even agree with that. But
no, I do. I have, like I said, I think I've done 6 drafts now, 5 or 6. I have 2 Manaea shares. His ADP is 335 in the month of December, where Stripling is 316. Yeah, yep. I've been taking Manaea every time. I like Stripling. Like I said, I think he's more of a real life pitcher for the Giants than fantasy pitcher, like kind of how you're saying. It's just the if he were to give me 6 regularly, I'd feel a lot better, obviously. I love the ratio help, but I'd love the ratio help, like pick 416, not 316. Right. So that's kind of where the dilemma comes into play. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. The Giants. I agree with what you said. Like, I'm very negative right now just because, like I said, every time I look on the Twitter, it's something that looks worse every time. In the end, though, the guys that are still doing the coaching are still there, right. And I believe in what they do with these guys. Exactly. So I'm with you on that. The front office has me concerned right now, but that has nothing to do with the guys that are actually playing at this point in time. So we'll see how that goes. Another great move, and at first I was kind of mad because I love Josh Naylor. I love him. I still like him for fantasy this year. I do. He basically got like a clone. If you look like stat lines, a lot of similarities between Josh Bell and Josh Naylor. And Josh Bell's coming to Cleveland. It's going to be great with him. We've already talked about the left-handed park factors in Cleveland on a bunch of different players already. And I like the move a lot for Josh. For Josh Bell. Yeah. But I've learned to like it for Josh Naylor too, because the fact Tito Francona was on the winter meetings MLB Tonight, and the first thing he said he did after he congratulated Bell was call Naylor and said, you're ready to DH, play first, and play the outfield because you're staying in the lineup. So that's telling you that this team wants both of their left-handed bats in there. That's pretty good. Good for both of them for fantasy-wise. So I love the move for Josh Bell.
Yes, and it's pretty apparent what Cleveland's trying to do. I mean, this fits their team like a glove with these kind of high-contact hitters that don't strike out. Josh Bell going to play every day. Park is much better than – well, really – like both of his teams last year, the park is better than San Diego. The lineup is a heck of a lot better than what Josh Bell had to deal with in Washington the first part of last season. So if you're hitting in between like J-Ram, Andrés Giménez, right behind Ahmed Rosario, Kwan, like those guys are going to get on base. And I like that. The only thing with Naylor, and I agree, like he's going to play, and I know he's your boy. I just wonder like if he goes down in that Cleveland lineup, that the Cleveland lineup falls off pretty quick. You've got like, I think they just signed Zanino. So you've got that near the bottom of the order. You've got maybe Miles Straw if he's still their everyday center fielder. I think if Josh Naylor goes down to like seventh or eighth in the lineup, that could be rough. But yeah, he's still going to play every day. So I like the move for both of those guys if you were on either one.
This is what they're looking at right now. Kwan, Rosario, J-Ram, Bell cleanup, Andrés Giménez 5th, Naylor 6th, Oscar Gonzalez 7th, though I still like 2.
Yep.
But then it's Zanino 8th, Straw 9th. So, yeah, it's not horrific, not bad. But I agree, though. There is a drop-off for sure. But basically, Naylor, just drive them all in. Don't score a lot of runs. That's what it kind of spells out in that scenario. And then maybe Miles Straw figures things out and it boosts the guys up top again. We'll see. But it could be a lot of Cleveland's at least, I think, I can't remember who I talked to recently, but they're putting it together to make it at least respectable, where it seemed like the world was ending a year ago.
Rube. I know you talked about it with Rube yesterday. I think it was talking about Class A. It is kind of impressive what Cleveland has done.
When it seemed like the world was on fire, which it literally looked like, even if you weren't a Cleveland fan, and to go back and look at their roster now, starting rotation, bullpen, like they got a team, you wouldn't be shocked if they contended for the Central again. Like they're actually a decent ball club. So good baseball team. Like they, whoever's in charge of that office, I could see the anger behind the fans, but they put it together pretty well. So I respect that. A team that's having trouble keeping a rotation intact is the Chicago White Sox, who still has Dylan Cease, but it seemed like a year or two ago, Ryan, this rotation was one of the more up-and-coming, better rotations in baseball. Like Ronaldo Lopez, at least really good in the pen now. That's good. Lucas Giolito's still here. Which Lucas do we get? Do we get a bounce back? Lance Lynn had an up-and-down year, still pretty good. So top three could be really good, could just be Dylan Cease still. Then it's Michael Kopech, who's a mess, and then they just re-signed Mike – or they signed, not really, signed Mike Clevinger, who I am not a fan of because I think he's still broken. Ever since he came back from that injury in San Diego, it's just been ugly. And I haven't seen many signs of life to make me feel any better about it, Ryan. So I'm fully off this one. I think it's an innings eater potential move. That's what they're hoping for. I don't even think he can do that right now. So I was confused by this move, to be honest.
Yeah, man. I'm getting some Dallas Keuchel vibes with this thing, to be honest.
I stacked against him every time on DFS. So that's about the same vibes.
Yeah, you don't want Dallas Keuchel vibes. I mean, former Cy Young, but I think that the Chicago White Sox version of Dallas Keuchel, I just think people see the name Mike Clevinger and want to think there's something left for that return to what we saw in 2018 and 2019. I fully agree with you, Bubba. Like, this is a different guy post injury. Basically every skill stat that we look at is trending in the wrong direction. Velocity was down almost 2 miles an hour last season compared to 2020. Swinging strikes were way down. Like, expected ERA from HQ is around 450. I just, with those ratios, I can't see him going that deep into games. I'll stop there. I should have just stopped when I started with Dallas Keuchel vibes.
It's ugly. That's the thing. Like, once good, ever since the injury has not been. And that's kind of the dilemma with Mike Clevinger. Another fun one that I'm in and I'm out. I have like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. It's Kyle Gibson to Baltimore. Like, I've always been a fan of late round Kyle Gibson, and usually it's been okay. Last year was disastrous. Like, I cut him. Like, there was no keeping Keuchel over six ERA in Philadelphia, though. We've kind of already talked about that ballpark will eat your lunch if you're not on. That's just flat out. A ballpark that won't eat your lunch if you're not on, at least to right-handed hitters, is Baltimore. And this could be one of those. We saw Lyles, who we'll talk about later, really perform well. There, we've seen a lot of pitchers, Bradish, do really well in that ballpark. This could be a really good move to get Kyle Gibson back on track, and definitely for fantasy as a late-round dart or a streamer at times. So I like the move overall. Like, I'm not going all in on Kyle Gibson, but I like the move.
No, I mean, I don't think many are going all in on Kyle Gibson, but you don't have
Justin Mason might.
Unless your name's Justin Mason, of course. You don't have to. ADP is 450. Like, similar to what we were talking about with, like, Taijuan Walker, if you need innings near the end of your rotation, these are going to be, I think, decent innings. I know Kyle Gibson had a 505 ERA last season. He's had a 5+ ERA in two of the last three seasons. But I think, I know his skills are a lot better than that. I think Baltimore sees that, and the park is great. And the lineup, the run support, I think, you know, not great, but Baltimore's a pretty damn good team. So I think if you're expecting like maybe a 4-ish ERA, league average, maybe a little bit worse than league average whip, but someone who I think is going to go deep into games, get some wins, you could do a lot worse at a 450 ADP.
Yep. 100% with you there. On the sheet, we have Jose Quintana. We talked about him last week when we talked about Senga. So we will move on from that when we all encompass that great move to be the fifth pitcher in New York to put together another quality role. Hey, Correa plays great defense behind Quintana. They'll really, really appreciate that. So that'll work.
He gets a boost because of Correa, for sure.
I'll add that to the conversation that we did not talk about last week, because for obvious reasons. But what we will talk about is the Dodgers made an interesting move to me. They went and added Noah Syndergaard. Obviously, the strikeouts were down a big amount last year. Really concerning. Like, dropped tremendously. But he still went about 135 innings, which is good to see off the injury. His ERA was below 4, which was good to see, considering he wasn't getting the strikeouts. So he's pitching, which is good to see. Now he goes to the Dodgers. And we know how the Dodgers do things. Like, this is one of those moves with an ADP of 387 that at least has my curiosity. I'm not saying he's going to be the guy that strikes out, you know, a million batters, but could the 6.9 K per nine get to 8.5? I wouldn't be shocked, or at least 8. Like, there could be a jump. Maybe he's broken, but I think if any team can figure it out, it will be the Dodgers. So I'm kind of buying in on this move. It's just an intriguing move to me.
That's what has me perplexed with Syndergaard, man, because, I mean, I've said a couple times already, appeal to authority, that with what the Giants have done, that the Dodgers are even better at optimizing their rotation. So when I saw this news, I went back and looked and tried to find, like, reasons to be excited for Noah Syndergaard.
It's tough.
I don't see anything. He made a pitch mix change kind of when he was traded last season and the middle of the year. The skills got even worse after that change. Like, I do not see it. And not to say it's not there. Like I said, LA, that front office can run laps around me. He doesn't have to face Carlos Correa in division. So that's a bonus. But just to twist that in there. But I don't see it, man. I really don't. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I cannot see a path to Noah Syndergaard being like this year's Tyler Anderson. And I feel like the market is going to not assume that, but I think that's going to be kind of baked into Syndergaard's price. And I think I'm still off just because I need to see something. And maybe I'm not looking in the right spots. I'm probably not, but I don't see it. And so therefore I don't think I'm going to be in.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. I'm interested because of the Dodgers, basically. That's got my peak interest. But
and that's the only reason.
Pretty much, because that drop off in the pitch mix you mentioned, it's disastrous. Like, it's so bad, so bad. And I remember, like, a lot of his starts last year, I didn't go back into them lately, but just doing DFS every day, you would think you'd want to stack against him, and he'd do just enough not to get shelled but not be great. That was a consistent thing with him. That's why his ERA is below 4, but he wasn't striking guys out. It was like the most frustrating outings over and over and over again. So,
right.
I don't know. See what happens. The Oakland Athletics, they made a surprising splash to me and got Trevor May, who's one of the better setup men in baseball with some closing potential. Basically a guy they could trade at the deadline if things work out. I thought he'd walk right in as the closer until then. Ryan Roof does not believe he'll be the closer. I guess time will tell. I won't speak everything for Ryan, but he also said, I wouldn't touch the Oakland bullpen because there's a million different pieces there. So take your picks. But I thought when they signed May, it was like a clear shot. Okay, we're going to give him the first go. It just made sense to me. But guys that are smarter than I with relievers said no. So we'll see what happens. I still think there's a chance. But yeah, interesting move. I don't know if there's a ton to it unless he is closing.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. And I trust Roof's analysis of the Oakland pen over what I can do. I will say, like, Trevor May's skills really kind of fell off in 2022. I know he had that kind of triceps. Yep, he was hurt with an arm injury, but I mean, he was hurt with an arm injury. So that's not good. But yeah, the swinging strikes were way down last year. So, like, I don't know. Roster Resource has Trevor May as the closer, which probably in itself boosts his ADP a little bit. But unless Oakland comes out and says so, I'm probably not touching this one. There was a really cool, this is a little bit just of a sidebar, but Trevor May is, like, he's a good dude, man. There's a story. There was a Prospects Live wrote a piece about Trevor May and kind of some tweaks he made. And Trevor May actually, like, read it and incorporated it into his offseason training this offseason. Actually replied to them on Twitter and said, thanks for the, you know, thanks for the tips and things like that. So that was kind of cool. He is somebody who is, and I mean, probably every major league pitcher is like this, but he's actively trying to get better. He's embracing kind of the underlying, the driveline kind of stuff. And so I wouldn't put improvement past him, but based on the injury, based on this bullpen, it's, I don't know. Not that exciting.
He's, he's one of the guys that's on the Chris Rowe show I talk about a lot. He's one of like the six guys in the rotation. So I've gotten to kind of learn about him a lot through that. He's a big time gamer. So he interacts with fans a lot in that regard. I believe he's from up in your neck of the woods is where he's originally from, up in the Washington area, I believe. So close to you in a roundabout way. Obviously he lives in New York, but he's a Cat person up in Washington area. So
he's going to love you. He's from Longview. No way.
Yeah. See, told you he's going to love Oakland. So just throwing that out there. I'm curious because I looked at another site we love. I'm not going to say their names. I don't know if they want me giving out their information. I know you're a member there as well. And probably about 80% of the listeners here are. And they have May in a committee with two other relievers in Oakland also, which is kind of what Ryan was speculating. So it's he might get his chances. We just don't know to what extent. But we'll see. We'll see. I think he'll actually love Oakland because he is so fan-friendly. Like, he'll embrace that culture. That's the one thing about there. The diehard fans are fun. I'll say that much.
Baseball's best dive bar, or last dive bar. I love that. Yeah, I love that quote about the Coliseum.
Yep, it'll be great. David Robertson signed with the Mets. Basically, there's hope he'd go back to, like, Philly or somewhere to get a closing gig. Obviously, that ain't happening now. So kind of put that one to bed.
Agreed.
A fun one here, because I made tons of jokes about Andrew Heaney for all my times. He signs with the Rangers, and this is interesting because great ballpark to pitch in so far, as we've seen. The thing with Heaney is as much trouble as I give him, as crap as I give him, lots of strikeouts, and when he's not giving up a million home runs, which isn't all the time, he's actually pretty good, like pretty good. So this could be a great spot for him. I've actually drafted him. I believe I drafted him in our Gladiator, or at least one of my two Gladiators. I think there's something there with Heaney, and I like this move a lot for him.
I know there's something there. There's a lot there. I mean, what Andrew Heaney did last season, a 17% swinging strike rate, a velocity that is on the upswing since 2020, 3.10 ERA that was pretty much fully supported by the skills. Like, that dude can pitch, and I'm of the belief, and I always will be, that Andrew Heaney, or really any pitcher for the most part, is not homer prone unless they give up a ton of fly balls, which Andrew Heaney does have a little bit of a fly ball tilt. But Andrew Heaney, each of the last two seasons, has an 18% home run to fly ball rate. The league average last year was 11%. And HQ's research continues to show that homer to fly ball rate is pretty much random from year to year. So I think if you take, you look at like an XFIP that Fangraphs puts out there, I think if you take Andrew Heaney's homer to fly ball rate and put that at league average, which is just as likely to happen as him repeating an 18% from last year, you've got a dude who's going to rack up Ks, who's going to be in the low threes, and who's a really good pitcher. Now, I haven't talked at all about the health. That's the elephant in the room.
Yep, that's a big one.
But on a per inning basis, man, this guy is, I think he's elite, personally.
Yeah, no, I got, I'm kind of buying, I'm never going to say elite with Andrew Heaney, but I have come to the camp of these. I've come to the camp that he's very good. I've gone that far. That's saying a lot for me to admit my faults in those regards. The funny thing when it comes to Andrew Heaney, and you mentioned the health history, the Rangers have Jacob DeGrom. Don't know if you know about his health history. Yeah. You got Heaney. You got Odorizzi, who's got health issues / home run ballitis. But then you have Martin Perez, who's whatever, and John Gray. Like, it's an interesting rotation. And like, tons of upside, but also like, it could open the door for Glenn Otto and company real quick.
Streamers delight, Glenn Otto.
Spencer Howard, Glenn Otto. It could really open the door for some trouble.
That was like the most perilous week of my fantasy year last year. I picked up Glenn Otto for a two-step. I think he walked like eight guys in the two, but he got two wins. And I cut him so fast. It's like, I cannot handle this guy.
That's so funny.
There's a decent chance this Rangers rotation in like August looks awful with all those injuries. It's going to be, boomer bust. It's going to be boom bust down there.
Bleak for sure. But Ryan, we'll wrap it up there. We got pretty far on our list. Actually, farther than I thought we were going to get. We got farther than I thought we were going to get. So we'll have a part three / maybe something. No, there'll probably be a million more moves. So part three coming up to start the new year off. But it's been fun. The hot stove's been great to get us going. Gladiators are all filled up. So those will be wrapping up here in the next couple of weeks. You're in the last one, I believe mid-January or something.
Yep.
And then it's DC season, 50 season, best ball season, and pretty soon real draft season. So lots of fun coming up. Any final thoughts as we wrap up the 2022 season?
Yeah, wrap up the calendar year here. It's been a blast, man. Been a blast to the listeners, the questions, the comments throughout. I will be back. Like I said, I'm going to unplug while I'm down in Arizona, a couple rounds of golf, spend some time with the family, that sort of thing. But I'll be back. I think, yeah, we're flying back New Year's Day. And I'll probably jump in a draft champions like January 2nd or 3rd. So I'll put something out there. Yeah, we'll figure something out to get some friends in that league and get drafting, because it's about to get real. Once the calendar turns to January, I mean, this is my first kind of cycle podcasting, but I just know, like, from Twitter and getting followers and that sort of thing, it really picks up once football kind of dies down and January hits. It's like a switch comes on. And so I'm super excited for just the whole draft season to swing into full force.
Yep. It's coming, and it's going to come fast. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll get your positions figured out for you. We'll get all the fun stuff, get you ready to draft, maybe do another stream or two. We might have some other fun stuff coming up if certain leagues pan out the way we think they might. There could be some fun coming your guys' way when it comes to content-wise for you guys and for us, I think, to do it all. So, like Ryan said, thanks for listening to us, guys. It's been an awesome first run together here, and it's gotten better as the years go on, so I'm looking forward to 2023. And to you, my friend, have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy the family. Safe travels. Hopefully you can get out of home to get to Arizona. Yeah. That'd be a good start. And hopefully it's not a monsoon when you play golf in Arizona this time. Because the guy says, nice shorts, dude. Or nice shorts weather. Yeah. I can picture it now. So
yeah. As the locals all head into the clubhouse, the tourists are all continuing to play in a monsoon. And yeah, the old guys are all making fun of me because I'm out there in shorts and a t-shirt. That was classic.
Man. It was wild, but great times, great podcasting. Everything was awesome. We'll be back with you guys. I believe it'd be January 5th will be our first episode of the next season. So you hope you guys all have a great holiday season. Stay safe, stay healthy. And this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 33. Catch you guys next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.